Are there valid reasons for suspecting President John F. Kennedy's murder was orchestrated by the U.S. state? Is the JFK assassination an example of what is called a state crime against democracy? What purpose would this serve? In what ways is the 50-year-old assassination similar to the attacks of September 11, 2001? If these are crimes of state, why has the media participated in the deception? And how can citizens confront the deep political forces responsible for these crimes? In the next hour, three guests will weigh in with their thoughts about this tragic historical milestone. Author and co-founder of the 9/11 Consensus Panel, Elizabeth Woodworth, independent journalist, media critic, and 9/11 truth pioneer, Barry Zwicker, and journalist and global research associate editor, Julie Levesque. On today's program, JFK and 9/11, Unmasking Deep State Power. Bringing you the analysis beyond the headlines, the Global Research News Hour is on the air. Welcome to the Global Research News Hour for the week of November 22, 2013. I am your host, Michael Welch. The Global Research News Hour is a special radio collaboration between the Center for Research on Globalization and campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM out of Winnipeg. We seek to provide listeners with access to analysis of some of the major stories shaping our world today, from thinkers, researchers, and unique political personalities rarely addressed by major media. Our program is available from the Center's website, globalresearch.ca. Our show is also broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We'll begin our show with News Notes, a sampling of articles from the Global Research News site. A funeral notice for Osama bin Laden was published on December 26, 2001 in the Egyptian newspaper Al-Ward. Also below is a CNN interview with its medical correspondent who examines the last non-faked video of bin Laden and concludes that bin Laden is seriously ill. There's also below a 2002 report that Israeli intelligence has concluded that bin Laden is dead. I cannot attest to the correctness of any of these reports, but it is unclear why there would be so much disinformation from such varied sources about bin Laden's condition or what purposes served. You can use this information to evaluate the Obama regime's unsubstantiated claim that Navy SEALs killed bin Laden in Pakistan a decade later. That's from the article Osama bin Laden's Obituary Notice, by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, posted November 21st, originally appearing at paulcraigroberts.org. Reports from volunteer workers surfaced in social media over the past 2 days, revealing that one of the reasons for the Philippine government's delayed delivery of food supplies was that international aid packages containing bottled water, canned goods, and powdered milk were being individually opened and repackaged with labels from the Department of Social Welfare and Development. What aid has been made available to the Eastern Visayas by the Philippine government is allocated on the basis of the National Disaster Relief Law. Thus, a wealthy city will automatically have greater aid allocated to it, while a poorer town or city will receive a significantly smaller amount. With its massive deployment of armed force, Washington is seizing the opportunity afforded it by the catastrophe to stage an immense photo op. It is using the devastation in the central Philippines to demonstrate the capacity of its armed forces in the region and to open the door for its military buildup throughout the region directed against China. That's from the article, U.S. Military Continues Massive Buildup in Philippine Disaster Zone Took Over Air Traffic in Tacloban, by Joseph Santolan, posted November 20th, originally appearing on the World Socialist website. Below is more documentation putting the lie to the media coverage and the perpetual cover-up of the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK. The powers that be desperately want as many of us viewers as possible to believe the easily disprovable big lie theory that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone crazed assassin of the president on November 22, 1963. 1. JFK's brain or parts of his skull were thrown backwards out of a large exit wound in the back of the skull onto the trunk of the limo, which is the reason why Jackie was famously seen on the film footage turning around and reaching backwards. 2. Also proving that there was at least one shooter in front of the motorcade, the surgical resident at Parkland Hospital, Dr. Ronald Jones, who was one of the several Parkland Hospital surgeons who attended JFK, all of whom incidentally also testified about the existence of the small entrance bullet wound in JFK's throat, gave testimony on last Sunday's Face the Nation with Bob Schieffer about the tiny quarter-inch entry wound in JFK's throat. Trauma surgeons know that entry wounds are small and exit wounds are large, like the large blowout wound at JFK's right occipital area of the skull, also proving a shot from in front of the motorcade. 3. Thirdly, it is important for citizens who should be exposed to the non-corporate side of the story to consult some of Jim Fetzer's powerful documented evidence that there was a conspiracy to kill JFK and a conspiracy to cover up the evidence which would have led honest investigators to find and name the conspirators. That's from the article, The JFK Assassination, Disputing the Official Theory that Lee Harvey Oswald Was the Lone Assassin, by Dr. Gary G. Coles, posted November 20th. Whereas 1929 was the adolescent crisis of a new world power, the U.S., we now experience the last days of an incurable and incurable that had been the world's sole superpower since 1945. But the whole organization of the world was built around the U.S., and it is no one's interests for it to collapse before a complete decoupling. So it is for everyone to safeguard the usual appearances while ensuring a smooth transition, which explains the slow crash in progress. It's a little like the parent who sneaks out of the nursery hoping to avoid waking the baby and starting up the bawling again, but the baby is the dollar and the parents are unworthy, for they are abandoning it altogether. The rapid internationalization of the yuan, causing a decline in the central role of the dollar, the loss of Saudi support, a key part of the petrodollar edifice, and the loss of the Americanist bastion of the EU, replaced by a Euroland relying on the euro, are all threats to the three remaining essential pillars of American power, which will disappear in 2014, precipitating considerable global upheaval. That's from the article, Internationalization of the Yuan, Crumble of the Dollar, Crisis of the European Monetary System. Internationalization of the yuan, the opening of Saudi Arabia, the implosion of the EU, and three of the last pillars of the dollar crumble from Global Europe Anticipation Bulletin, GEAB, posted November 20th, originally appearing in GEAB number 79. These are just a few of the featured articles appearing last week on the Global Research website. Regular visitors to the site are encouraged to send monetary contributions by fax, mail, or online. Just go to globalresearch.ca and click Donate on the menu bar. It's recognized as one of the most tragic and iconic events in U.S., if not world, history. Friday, November 22nd, 12:30 p.m., 50 years ago, the 35th President of the United States, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, was gunned down while traveling in his presidential motorcade at Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas. A follow-up investigation, known as the Warren Commission, concluded that suspect Lee Harvey Oswald had acted alone in carrying out the assassination. Numerous researchers have expressed their skepticism about this version of events and claim that not only were there several individuals responsible for the assassination, but that the U.S. state itself is implicated. One of the most compelling of these researchers is James Douglas, author of JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. This book was referred to by Oliver Stone, creator of the acclaimed film JFK, as an extraordinary new book that offers the best account he has read about this tragedy and its significance. Douglas was highlighted in a recent release from the 9/11 Consensus Panel. The article connected the JFK killing with the 9/11 event and called them both state crimes against democracy. Elizabeth Woodworth is a researcher, a co-founder of the 9/11 Consensus Panel, and a contributor to Global Research. We spoke to her recently to get her perspective on the assassination and its similarities to 9/11. Elizabeth Woodworth, thank you very much for joining us on our program.
Well, thank you, Michael, for having me.
Now, the name of the release that was sent out this week is JFK 9/11 and the Deep State, Hard Evidence in a Post-Snowden World. You're clearly making that comparison between the JFK assassination and 9/11. Could you maybe outline a little bit, like exactly how you see those two events being linked?
And there are many parallels, but I won't go into the parallels just yet. But the significance of these two major world-changing events, it's important to look at the context in which these things happened. So you might think of this as a concentric circle, with the global ecology being the big circle, and within that we have a smaller circle, which is the human economy. And within the human economy, in a smaller circle, we have the dominance of a military perpetual war economy based on oil. And it is this military economy that has been enabled by the assassinations of John Kennedy, his brother Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Their assassinations were carried out to stop, because they were trying to stop war. They were trying to stop this military economy. And in each case, the three assassinations, a lone gunman was held responsible. And in fact, a lone gunman was essential to prevent suspicion of a government conspiracy. It's enormously interesting that Jim Garrison, who was the New Orleans judge in 1988, he was back in 1966. He did an independent investigation into the assassination, which he always called the murder, of JFK. And Garrison said in 1988, and this is a very interesting quote, quote, "Every day that passes, high individuals at the top of the United States government are playing an active role in concealing from you the truth of John Kennedy's murder." And so now, this week, the 50th anniversary of JFK's murder, we have these major mainstream TV-based programs that we all love to listen to, Nova, Frontline, Passionate Eye, and in each case, they are assiduously carrying out Jim Garrison's prediction and his statement that this is what is going on. I mean, they're not talking. There's no public debate happening on television about whether, in fact, the other works that are available showing quite the opposite, that there were other guns involved. I mean, they're not being given to us at all. So we have to take it as a given that the mainstream media, which covered up the assassination of Kennedy, covered up 9/11, and we can get into some of that evidence later in our discussion here, they are still pushing for the official stories, which cover up Thomas Merton called the unspeakable, which is something that nobody really wants to look at. The unspeakable.
So you seem to be speaking about these incidents as a kind of a portal on a reality that there is a power higher than the elected officials.
Well,
the military, as you put it.
Yes, or you could say not so much higher, but underlying. You could compare our democracy as it's running now, and it started after World War II with the creation of the CIA. Now we have a situation where we elect presidents. They come and go, and they carry out the same policies. Nothing really changes. And people keep wondering why we elected Obama with all his promises and hope and everything, but nothing has changed. And the reason that nothing has changed is that this has become a kind of a window dressing front for the real power in society. And that real power is held by the immensely wealthy armament industries, the banks, and the media, which are now owned by the defense industry. And even Hollywood, which in 1991 could make a movie like JFK and have it an enormous box office hit, Hollywood is not doing that anymore. They're not making movies about conspiracies. Instead, they're making movies about how good the CIA is and how about the capture of or the destruction of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. It's all coming out of the Pentagon now. And one of the top actors, I think it was Tom Cruise, but I'm not sure, said that those kinds of movies that they used to make are no longer possible to be made by the major studios, which are now also under the thumb of the military-industrial state. And Eisenhower, I think a lot of people know this, in 1961, he was starting to have troubles himself. He wanted to meet with Khrushchev before he left office. And at that time, the CIA and forces behind the scenes were setting up obstacles. He had planned to meet Khrushchev to talk about peace, and one of the U.S. spy planes was shot down over Russia, and that looked really bad to Khrushchev, and it caused his meeting with Khrushchev to be canceled. So Eisenhower started to suspect that there were forces working behind the scenes that were blocking his wishes as a president, and as the president, he represented the people. So, of course, then along comes JFK, and at the height of the Cold War, JFK was terrified after the Cuban Missile Crisis. And the book, it's an extraordinary book. This book has been said, it's written by James Douglas, and we covered it in the press release. And it's called JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters. And this book tells the story of how JFK was terrified, really, that his generals and the people who were promoting nuclear war, they felt that it was a winnable war. They felt they were ahead of the Russians and the Soviets in the development of weapons, and that they could sustain losses of 40 million people but come out the victor. And Kennedy thought they were mad, these generals, and he started to go behind the scenes in secret correspondence with Khrushchev, who was also having the same problem with his generals. And they were trying to create an agreement that they would not follow this course of action that they were being propelled towards by the military-industrial complex, who, you know, their whole mission in life, their identity is all about war. And Kennedy had a turn in his own consciousness towards peace. And when that happened, that was when he was marked for assassination. And the book, the JFK and the Unspeakable, it really gives in enormous detail. It's a beautiful work of scholarship. And Oliver Stone said it was the best work on the subject that he'd seen. And Daniel Ellsberg, who was the man who released the Pentagon Papers during the Vietnam War, he said that this book by James Douglas was what was prompting him to think that a new investigation into JFK was necessary.
Yeah. Well, then you talk about a new investigation, and I hear that, I mean, a lot of, with 9/11, just as with the Kennedy assassination, you have these voices on the outside calling for, including, you know, the 9/11 consensus panel saying that we need to have a new investigation. But that's a convenient comparison right there. I mean, how the way the state's official investigations of these incidents, what they have in common, because presumably they aren't really investigating it, are they?
After every major event, tragic event in the United States, there's always been an investigation. And Pearl Harbor, there was one for JFK, but it was that investigation, the Warren Commission. Any witness that didn't support what they were trying to prove, which what they needed to prove, which was a lone gunman, simply was not interviewed. And it was the same with the 9/11 Commission. They left out all kinds of witnesses that saw things that refuted the official story as it was very quickly disseminated. Like, the official story was all, in both cases, the official story was all trumped up and ready to go within a very short time. So these things were premeditated, and then they just laid out the convictions or without any real investigation at all. They laid out the culprits.
So are there other connections that you could speak to with regard to, not like we have JFK and 9/11, also other assassinations like the Martin Luther King's assassination and Robert F. Kennedy's assassination, which, you know, is also believed to have been again state crimes against democracy, as it's called.
Well, in my I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, but I wrote an article last April, and it was actually, there were two articles. And the title of the article, it's on globalresearch.ca, and the title of the article is JFK, MLK, and RFK, 50 Years of Suppressed History, New Evidence on the Assassination of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Robert F. Kennedy. And the King assassination is very interesting because it was never really tried, and it happened in April 1968, just before Senator Robert Kennedy was also assassinated in June. And King's alleged assassin, James Earl Ray, had long been denied a criminal trial, in spite of repeated efforts by the Martin Luther King family. In 1999, the King family commissioned an attorney, William F. Pepper, to pursue a civil wrongful death suit on behalf of Ray. And Ray had died in 1998, the year before. The case called 70 witnesses, and it was tried in Memphis Circuit Court before Judge James E. Swearingen. After 30 days of hearing evidence that had never been presented in a court of law, the jury exonerated Ray in a victory for the King family. The 12-person jury instead found a murder conspiracy involving agents of the government of the United States, state of Tennessee, and the city of Memphis. And there was only one reporter, Wendell Stacy from Memphis, ABC News, who covered the trial in depth. He was fired and suffered attempts on his life. And the massive evidence and verdict for this trial was thus buried in the U.S. media, stunting history and killing hope for truth.
Are there any other ways forward, as you see it, that we can counter this, I guess, malevolent entity?
Well, first we need to arm ourselves with information.
Yeah.
And then having it, the more people that have this information and want to see a solution to climate change, for example, they need to arm themselves. They need to go to 350.org, which is the main activist website for climate change. And up there, they'll find all kinds of recommendations for how to get involved in the activism. And the more people that get into activism, the more the mainstream has to kind of shift its ground, like it did with Snowden. It's very interesting to me that Snowden was actually became the number one news item there for a couple of months. It was the top of the news that people were all being listened to. Not just listened to, our emails are being listened to. Everything is being, Skype, even texting is being listened to. And why is this necessary? I mean, they've got everything they could ever want to blackmail any judge or anybody who wanted to really get strong against the official accounts of JFK and 9/11. Say some judge tried to bring that up, they could come out of their NSA databases and they could silence him, because everybody says things that are that compromise themselves sooner or later, snatches of things that can be taken and pasted together. There's absolutely no end to what the deep state will do, and this is why Merton talks about the phenomenon that most of us don't want to know about, which is the unspeakable. And the unspeakable is a vacuum that exists in some kinds of personalities. It's a void, and there's nothing in there that even begins to resemble compassion or truth. It's just about power. And these people, they've got control. They get control, and they actually steer and manipulate society from behind the scenes. And there's a lot of evidence. I'm not a crackpot. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm basically interested in factual information. And if you go to consensus911.org, you'll see that there's 23 panelists there who have been spending the last 2.5 years using a medical model of review to establish evidence that refutes the official account of 9/11. And on this panel, there are 6 PhDs, 3 attorneys, 3 commercial airline pilots, a medical doctor, and a couple of ex-NASA people. Now, if you want to call us conspiracy theorists, see, the press won't go near this. It's too dangerous for them to report on our panel. The honorary members include the honorary president of the Italian Supreme Court, Ferdinando Impossumato, and the longest-serving member of the British Parliament, and others, Lynn Margulis, who was married to Carl Sagan until her death, she was on the honorary list. Supported our panel's work. So I could never get this interview on the CBC because the United States would immediately tell them, why are you allowing this kind of interview? It's ruining our official stories. So what we're up against here is to get through to climate change and actually affect change. We need to get the population riled up, and instead of talking about Rob Ford the whole 2 weeks of the UN climate summit in Warsaw, Poland, this past 2 weeks, the CBC television every night should be reporting on progress there. And I phoned them. I spent an hour talking to them. Why are you not over there? And they said, we can't afford to send a journalist to Warsaw.
Elizabeth Woodworth, I really want to thank you for sharing these provocative points with us and sharing your analysis on this rather important anniversary. And, thanks for your work with the 9/11 Consensus Panel, and maybe we'll speak again soon.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Michael. It's a pleasure meeting you by telephone.
Okay. I've been speaking with Elizabeth Woodworth. She's the former manager of library services for the British Columbia Ministry of Health and an avid researcher into 9/11 and the co-founder of the 9/11 Consensus Panel. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcast out of Winnipeg on campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM and on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We are also podcast on the website globalresearch.ca. Barry Zwicker is a longtime journalist and media critic. He is an independent documentary producer, author, and social and political activist. Barry Zwicker has followed a lot of these so-called state crimes against democracy events, and he joins me from his home in Toronto. How are you doing, Barry?
Just fine this day. Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Now, Barry Zwicker, let's talk a little bit about the Kennedy assassination. I think there's maybe two aspects of the... at least two aspects of the Kennedy assassination that I just sort of like to get some input from you on. One is the way the government acted in response to the attacks. I mean, there was the Warren Commission, but also like some of the incidents on that occasion that lead you to believe that this was, as you say, an execution, a state crime against democracy.
To take the points you raise in order, the Warren Commission, which indeed was struck not very long after the execution took place, especially in comparison to how long it took the Bush regime to strike the 9/11 Commission, which was 422 days, whereas the Warren Commission was struck about a week after the execution. But the Warren Commission was loaded with people who had interests that would lead them away from finding out the truth about what really happened in Dallas 50 years ago tomorrow. And so Alan Dulles would be one example. He was head of the CIA, and it was the CIA... which Kennedy, who was very angry about the role of the CIA in the Bay of Pigs operation, he said, Kennedy is reliably reported to have said that he, quote, wanted to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces, unquote. So Dulles was very much opposed to Kennedy. He did not conceal his contempt for Kennedy. And probably really everything Kennedy stood for, because Kennedy also was reining in the corporations, especially U.S. Steel and so on. And he was going to, he had begun to wind down the war in Vietnam. So that was a whitewash, shall we say. The Warren Commission was a whitewash. So there's one of your parallels. One thing that we know better now than we did then, because in those days we had what was called the military-industrial complex. Now, Kennedy inherited the military-industrial complex, which was a toxic force that Eisenhower, who preceded Kennedy as president, that Eisenhower warned about in his farewell address as president. He warned against the power of the military-industrial complex. And so that really was the darker force, the CIA and the military-industrial complex, and those dark, shadowy figures at the top, which included Lyndon B. Johnson, the vice president. They were the ones behind Kennedy's execution. And the proof of it, if you will, is that after he was executed and LBJ took over the presidency, he turned things around and he began to prosecute the Vietnam War. It should really be called the American War rather than the Vietnam War, because a complete war of aggression by the USA against a tiny country. So LBJ prosecuted that war. And it's very telling that, for instance, in Vietnam, there was something called Operation Phoenix, which was the scheduled execution of the village leaders in Vietnam. So CIA assassins went out under Operation Phoenix. In the middle of the night, they would find the hut where the village leader lived and would execute him, usually by garroting, which is silent. Mm. And so the people at the top have no compunction about assassination, and just as we see with Obama and the drones today, they will do that, and they will assassinate both internationally and domestically.
Sounds like
Then, as far as the military-industrial complex, so-called, is concerned, there's a true exchange that LBJ had with an aide as that war was becoming worse, and the aide said, "You know, Lyndon, you can actually stop this war," and Johnson said, "No, I can't." And the aides persisted, and he said, "Yes, you're the president. You have the power to stop that war." And Lyndon Johnson said to his aide, "You don't understand. I can't stop it because my friends are making too much money."
You know,
and that shows the tie-in between the money power and the armaments power at the top. And So the connections, the associations, the parallels with 9/11 are so obvious that they're breathtaking.
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing. I had recently spoken with Elizabeth Woodworth, who's basically, she also wrote a couple of articles for Global Research in which she basically talked about the tie between JFK and 9/11 is that you had these leaders, an underlying power that whose main agenda was military aggression and that military-industrial complex, and anyone or anything that might have gotten in the way. In the case of Kennedy, it was the nuclear arms race. In the case of today, as she sees it, there's the whole need to mitigate climate change, and that seems to be that popular will to mitigate climate change seems to go against the mandates of the that underlying power, that deep political power that seems to be underlying all of these the popular will. I don't know. Do you see, is that sort of the along the same lines that you you see this?
I do very much so. Because global climate change is obviously global. And what has happened, it seems to me, and not me alone, is that since the 1960s, when the dark forces of militarism and corporatism engaged in the systematic execution of leaders in the USA, I mean, you had the execution of JFK was followed by the execution of his brother and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And the dark forces at the top, and they're heavily populated by psychopathic personalities, people with no remorse, no conscience, only thinking of themselves first and foremost, very power-oriented. And so they will not hesitate to wipe out the best and the brightest, as they did with the village leaders in Vietnam, as they did with their own leaders in the USA. But this has now expanded, and Elizabeth, I think, is on the right track, to be a global phenomenon. So that in Europe, you had the so-called strategy of tension, NATO's secret armies, Operation Gladio, and terrorism in the Western Empire. I'm reading from the title of Daniel Ganser's wonderful book about that. And it was a whole series of operations in Europe after World War II, which were bombings and so forth, which killed many innocent people, always blamed on the communists, always blamed on the left. The left generally wanted peace, and the right wanted war. And this has expanded to be global now. So now you have global false flag operations happening almost on a daily basis, these explosions in Lebanon and Iraq, typically in mosques or markets where innocent civilians are, and they're blown to bits. and it's horrible, it's an outrage. Who possibly would benefit from that except powers that want to destabilize those societies and stop the and to encourage whatever religious or other strife or tensions that are within the society anyway. They want to exacerbate those so that people will fight each other and they'll be disorganized and they will not be able to gather the consciousness of who really is destroying their lives and their countries. So it's become global now. And global climate change, we can see from the world record typhoon that swept through the Philippines, which is distinctly connected with the higher temperature of the Pacific by 2 or 3 or 4 degrees centigrade along the path of that cyclone, absolutely connected to global climate change, to global warming. Mm. And so the powers that be, which include the big energy companies, the fossil fuel companies,
the oligarchy,
dinosaurs, along with the armaments industry, they don't want to have this recognized. They don't want to have action taken to attempt to ameliorate the global warming.
We've been talking about comparisons between the JFK assassination and 9/11. What about differences? Because with 9/11, it seems, or so the argument goes, that that was designed to have a psychological impact. But you know, the motive in terms of JFK was different, was it not?
Well, I would agree with you there. The psychological impact of JFK's execution, and I'm one of the declining number of people who can remember where they were the day that they got that horrible news. The psychological impact was, in it as it were, a negative for the perpetrators. In other words, many, many people loved Kennedy. Mind you, the people at the top hated him with a vengeance. That's well recorded. But they would foresee that huge numbers of people would be heartbroken and distressed extremely by his being murdered. And so that's obviously a negative for the leadership. Whereas, as you correctly point out in your question, with 9/11, nobody was intended to be heartbroken. They were intended to be made angry, with the anger directed at these alleged fanatical Muslims. And so in that sense, they were different.
It seems as if what we're dealing with here is a power that it seems indistinguishable from what we recognized as organized crime. How could the public realistically overcome that kind of power if this is indeed the power underlying the popular will as expressed, at least in theory, by our elected representatives? How can that be overcome?
Well, these underlying or overarching powers, which were dubbed by Eisenhower the military-industrial complex, we've come to realize more fully since Kennedy's time that it's bigger and it's worse than the military-industrial complex. And it is, and you could use capital letters for this, it's the intelligence, military, academic, industrial, media complex, which, if you spell it out, spells I MEME. Intelligence, military, academic, industrial, media complex. So what we're up against most seriously, and that's why I wrote a whole book about it, is the media cover-up and the media simultaneously confusing people and of course, showing no leadership and not being at one with the average people who want to live their lives in peace and not be forever made fearful and being tricked into supporting wars and aggression and the whole military project, which has grown grotesquely since Kennedy's day. So the short answer, simplistic answer to your question is education. What we need most is understanding, and understanding that Indeed, there are conspirators. There are not just conspiracy theories, but conspiracy facts at the top of society especially. We know there are minor conspiracies. We actually read about them in our newspapers almost every day. Someone will be charged with conspiracy to commit fraud, conspiracy to commit murder, and so on. This is well known. Well, of course, by the same token, there are conspiracy at the top, and these are far, far more serious. And yet, the conspiracies at the top, there's a kind of a birth control exerted, a thought-stopping phrase called conspiracy theorist, which the media have faithfully repeated billions of times ever since the CIA deliberately introduced it into public discourse when the public was becoming more skeptical about the Warren Commission report. Exactly documented that the Psychological Operations Division of the CIA sent out memoranda. These were brought out in congressional testimony in the 70s, sent memoranda to their assets, as they call them in the media, saying, use this phrase, conspiracy theorist, every chance you get, in book reviews and otherwise. And so that the gatekeepers and the agents that are embedded within the media, and they've become far more numerous since, constantly dub anybody who questions very dirty tricks at the top as being conspiracy theorists. It's a tremendously effective phrase that, as I say, is a thought stopper. And that's just one of the weapons that they use. The main one is to cover up, is simply not to question, let alone investigate, the facts, for instance, behind 9/11. We've seen that in the whole 12 years since 9/11, that the mainstream media, and for that matter, the majority of so-called alternative media, which are also heavily infiltrated by state agents, they will not question, let alone investigate, the facts. The monumental number of facts now available about 9/11 that you and I and millions of people around the world know about, thanks mainly to being in touch with each other on the internet.
Well, Barry Zwicker, it's been a pleasure having you on. These have been fascinating insights, and I hope we can speak again, maybe on the media more broadly, and that whole concept of infiltration and whatnot.
I hope so, and I wonder if I could just very quickly put in a plug for two resources here. One is Brass Check TV, one word, Brass Check TV, that you can Google. They're wonderful. They're very 9/11 truth friendly, and they've run a whole series in the past week on JFK. And the other is the book JFK and the Unspeakable by the Canadian author James Douglas, D-O-U-G-L-A-S-S. And those two are the best resources on the JFK assassination that I could mention right now.
Barry Zwicker, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now.
And I've been speaking with Barry Zwicker, longtime journalist, broadcaster, and media critic, and 9/11 truth activist. The mainstream media has may have been disappointing in terms of its coverage of the JFK assassination on its 50th anniversary, but one medium that is going a little bit further in getting facts is the website Global Research. I'm joined by Julie Levesque. She is an independent journalist and researcher and also associate editor of Global Research. How are you doing today, Julie?
Very good, thank you. Yourself?
I'm not too bad. Now, Julie, I happened to watch CBC just the other night, and they actually kind of surprising to me, considering that the movie JFK had come out 20 years ago, and you know, so it's like you'd think that some of the points that were raised in that movie would resonate with a wide swath of the population, and yet the CBC still continues to broadcast the questions of the official story of the Kennedy assassination, similarly to the way they broadcast questions of the official story of 9/11. Is, well, they call it a conspiracy theory, right? So, and maybe they'll make mention of it, but it's more as a kind of a sociological phenomenon than as an actual serious investigation into the truth. I'm wondering, are you followed some of the mainstream media coverage of the JFK assassination. I'm wondering what your impressions are. Are they still kind of sticking to that same line?
Well, I think in general, not only with the JFK coverage, but with the coverage of any major event or a deep event, as Peter Dale Scott calls them, or state crimes against democracy, the major mainstream media always has the same reaction. Anything that threatens the established order will basically get no coverage. So whenever you have another version of the events, or you have an analysis, a valid analysis, which contradicts the mainstream, the official story of an event, it will very often be labeled as a conspiracy theory, because then it excludes the whole analysis and the people who defend that analysis. It excludes them from the debate, you know. And that's, I mean, basically there's like three things that the mainstream media do with such events as the JFK assassination. They do propaganda, censorship, and cover-up. You know, they will repeat the official story, they will not question it, and, you know, they set the agenda. So trivial stuff will make the headlines, and important news will be buried, you know, in the last pages of newspapers, for example. And I will suggest an article later on about a court case, Martin Luther King court case in 1999, which barely made the news, and it should have been front page news. So yeah, the mainstream media basically they control the debate and they narrow it down. You know, they will have experts which are presented as independent. For example, lately we've it was proven that some of the experts who were commenting on the events in Syria were actually had ties to the military industrial complex.
Wow.
But they were presented as independent. So there's this whole, like I said, you know, propaganda, censorship, and cover-up. It's all together in the mainstream media. That's what, you know, keeps valid analysis about these events from being brought.
Yeah, smoke and mirrors. So what about the website Global Research? Are there any articles on that website that stand out in terms of exposing the issue of the JFK assassination in the context of state crimes against democracy?
Yes, absolutely. There is actually one article about the concept of state crimes against democracy. It's an article by Peter Phillips and Mickey Huff. And yeah, they talk about the research of Lance DeHaven Smith from Florida State University, and yeah, well, he elaborates the concept of the state crimes against democracy, and they talk about the proven ones since World War II, like McCarthyism, you know, the fabrication of evidence of communist infiltration, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, the Iran-Contra affair, and the fixed intelligence on WMDs to justify the Iraq War. They also talk about the suspected state crimes against democracy, the October Surprise, for example, the anthrax episode shortly after 9/11, and also the Martin Luther King assassination. Now, I was surprised when I saw that they listed that as a suspected state crime, because, and that's what I was talking about earlier, one major event which did not make the news was a court case in 1999 where U.S. government agencies were found guilty in the Martin Luther King assassination. And it was proven that it was a conspiracy between the mafia, the local, state, and federal government agencies who were involved in the assassination. And they also identified someone else, and not James O'Rey, as the shooter. So there's an article on that called U.S. Government Agencies Found Guilty in Martin Luther King's Assassination. It went viral. It got really a lot of hits when we posted it. I think it was just last year that we posted that. I wasn't even aware of that court case. So, and it came out in 99, so that's over 10 years ago. And very few people know about that. Mm. On JFK, there's actually two articles. One from Gary G. Coles, which is quite recent. It's called The JFK Assassination, Beware of the Cover-Up and Obvious Plot. And then you have a good article, two articles actually, that I found from Elizabeth Woodworth that you mm-hmm. talked to earlier. One of them is JFK, MLK, RFK, 50 Years of Suppressed History, New Evidence on Assassination of John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Robert F. Kennedy. There's another one on 9/11, which is really good. It's a very long article, very detailed. It's called Ethical Reflections on the 9/11 Controversy, The Responsibility of the Media to Tell the Truth. And in that article, she asks the question, do information science and media professionals have a duty to provide evidence-based information to a questioning public? So that's very interesting. And the last article I would suggest to your listeners is an article by David Ray Griffin, who is like, I think he's the person who wrote the highest number of books and articles on 9/11. David Ray Griffin. The article is called Building What? How State Crimes Against Democracies Can Be Hidden in Plain Sight, the 9/11 Official Story and the Collapse of WTC Building 7. And that's also a very detailed article, and there is a specific chapter on the role of the mainstream media where he cites Peter Dale Scott, who wrote a lot as well on what he calls deep events. And if you don't mind, I'll read the quote to you because it really summarizes what's happening in the mainstream media. It says, the mainstream U.S. media have become so implicated in past protective lies that they, as well as the government, have now a demonstrated interest in preventing the truth about any of these events from coming out. This means that the current threat to constitutional rights does not derive from the deep state alone. The problem is a global dominance mindset that prevails not only inside the Washington Beltway, but also in the mainstream media, one which has come to accept recent inroads on constitutional liberties and stigmatizes or at least responds with silence to those who are alarmed by them. Acceptance of this mindset's notions of decorum has increasingly become a condition for participation in mainstream public life. So basically, if you don't adhere to that mindset, you won't have a voice. You won't have a say in the mainstream media.
Mm, yeah, and it's quite a few figures that have just sort of been blacklisted in that way, eh?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, if you look for global research on the web, you will very often find conspiracy theory websites as the definition for global research. So, people should do their own research and make up their own minds before believing.
Yeah. Well, that's
when they hear that someone or some website is labeled as a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. Think for yourself. Do your own research. Amen to that,
yes.
Julie. Well, thank you so much for sharing that information with our listeners.
Thank you, Michael.
And I've been speaking with Julie Levesque, the independent researcher and journalist and associate editor of Global Research. That's it for our special program on the 50th anniversary Kennedy assassination, and that marks the end of our show for this week. You've been listening to the Global Research News Hour. You can hear our programs every week on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and on partnering radio stations across the country. We are broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. You can also download each episode from the website globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I am series host and producer Michael Welch. Join us again next week.